My name is Talia Smith, and you're listening to Once Upon a Time, a storytelling podcast. Enjoy! Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. It's been a while, but we're very happy to have you all with us today. Today, we are with a guest who was in our very first season, and I'm so happy to have him back with us. We have Muptasin Zaman. Muptasin is an artist, museum educator, makeup artist, chronic crocheter, musical theater enthusiast. Welcome back to the pod, Muptasin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Oh my gosh, 2 years ago? Maybe a little bit more than that.
Height of quarantine, like right at the beginning, I think.
It seems like a lifetime ago, and I really appreciate you coming on now, but also then when, you know, I was just trying to get people to come on the pod and I didn't really have a foundation. So you really trusted us and you trusted the process. So thank you for trusting us again.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I had a lot of fun doing it that time. That's why I was looking forward to coming back at some point whenever I could. So I'm glad to be invited back.
For those who may not remember, last time we recorded an episode about Little Women. And Little Women is definitely a coming of age story where you can really put yourself in the characters. But it was also a 19th century story about women in Massachusetts. This story is kind of similar in the ways where you can really insert yourself into the characters. It tells a really strong story about, you know, what it means to grow up and the relationships you have with your family. But in many ways, it is very different than Little Women as well. So this episode, we're going to be telling the story of a different book. This is called The Loophole by Naz Kattoub, and I'm excited for you to tell us some fun facts about The Loophole.
Three fun facts about the story. So a lot of the aspects of the story and the protagonist and his life are heavily inspired by the author himself. The story of Orpheus and Eurydice, the Greek tale that many of us may know, is mentioned by the characters a lot throughout the book. And a lot of the book's themes of adventure, doubt, and love are alluded to the story. So it's almost like a loose kind of inspired retelling of Orpheus and Eurydice. This is also the author's first novel. It was released during Pride Month of this year. I'm assuming that was intentional because of all the queer themes in the story. And little fun fact as well, I actually stumbled upon this book at, I was at the Pride Festival last summer, and there was a little like booth for the Charm City bookstore. And I just saw it sitting on a table with other queer-themed books, as one would have at a Pride festival. And I don't know, I just looked at the cover and something about it just drew me in. So I picked it up and I just kind of started flipping through it a little bit. And immediately I was like, this is a book I need to read. This feels like something I would really enjoy. So I go to pay for it. And the card reader wasn't working on their little device that they had. And I was like, oh, no worries. I'll order it off of your website, or like I'll come into your store at some point. And the guy that was working there was like, honestly, just take it. You can pay for it online and then just send us an email to let us know. And then even if you don't, I hope you still enjoy the story. But we do trust our community to do the right thing. And I was like, absolutely. Like the second I got home, I went on their website, placed an online order, sent them an email, told them what happened, got an email back, and they just sent like this really nice message just saying, thank you so much. And we knew that we could trust our community. And it was just like a really nice little wholesome moment, unrelated to the actual story itself. But I just thought that was a nice way for me to be introduced to this book.
Not only is that a great intro to the story from how it relates to you, but it's kind of, in a way, magical. And this story is nothing if not a little bit magical. So I feel like that is a really kind of cool connection there.
Not to be super like superstitious or anything, it just felt like it was just the right moment for this specific book to be drawn to me, you know?
Absolutely. And you ended up making a TikTok about this book. And when I was, you know, doom scrolling one evening, I saw it on my For You page and I stopped my tracks because this season, what we really want to do is tell stories of adventure. And your TikTok really struck me as a story that feels very fresh and feels very relevant to now. And also not something that I really knew a lot about. I'd never heard of this book before, so I was really excited to learn more about it. Can you describe a little bit about this story, some of maybe like the main plot?
Yep. So it's about this young boy named Syed. He goes by Sai. I believe he's 17 years old. He's gay. He's Muslim. And he lives with this very conservative Muslim family. He recently was broken up with by his boyfriend, who ended up going abroad. He hasn't heard from him in months. And he meets this woman named Reggie. One thing leads to another, and she decides that she's going to help him find his true love back. So they go on this huge adventure around the world, and it's just a celebration of identity, culture, and just like learning to love yourself for who you are. Two things I recently got into this year were the Heartstopper books and Ms. Marvel. I love the queer themes of Heartstopper. I loved the sort of coming of age-ness of both stories. And then Ms. Marvel also threw in that South Asian Muslim representation that I've never seen in coming of age stories like that, or in, you know, Marvel superhero things as well. So it almost kind of gave me those feelings that I got from both together in this one book. Just those like warm, fuzzy feelings that watching or reading Ms. Marvel or watching or reading Heartstopper give you, this book kind of gives you both of those at the same time.
All right, so we're about to get with the telling of this story. But before we do that, a content warning for homophobia, parental abuse, and disownment. So keep that in mind if you're listening to the podcast today. And with that, I'll hand it over to you, Mubtasin. Would you begin the story with my favorite phrase, once upon a time?
All right. So once upon a time, Syed Sai Nizam is a gay Indian Muslim 17-year-old who was recently dumped by his ex-boyfriend Farooq. After Farooq decided that he needed to leave Los Angeles to teach abroad, Sai couldn't commit to leaving his family forever to join him. One day, while working at his dead-end barista job, he encounters a bizarre young woman named Reggie who drunkenly stumbles into the door outside, and Sai decides to go and help her, while other onlookers are just staring and judging. He's the only one that actually steps up to help her. Due to his kindness, Reggie offers to grant him three wishes, revealing herself to be an extremely wealthy heiress. Sai is skeptical at first, but Reggie instantaneously grants him $1 million after a sarcastic first wish. He begins to wonder who this woman is and why she's showing him so much generosity.
Wow. Okay. So really right off the bat of this book, we are introduced to a lot of really interesting characters. So first is Sai. Can you tell us a little bit about Sai, we're coming in from his point of view and the things that he describes about his life. So he's working at this coffee shop. He has a broken phone that he mentions a lot. He has different symbols of his relationship with Farooq, which it's sort of introduced to us in a mysterious way, his relationship with Farooq. Would you agree?
Yeah. I feel like it's one of those things where right off the bat, you already know that he's not really in a super great place emotionally or really in any way. And he's sort of mourning this loss of this first love that he had. But you don't really know anything at all about this relationship because the story just immediately starts with him already in that place. What I liked was there was sort of this non-linear approach where as the story went on, a chapter would end and then they would flash back 1 year, however many months, and you just get this little like anecdote or just this little moment of their relationship together at various points throughout this relationship was about a year.
Yeah.
And as those kind of happen, you start to get the full picture of how they met, how they fell in love, what their relationship was like, how it ended, and like all of these things that you don't have right away. But as you're reading the book, you start to get all of that context.
Yeah, and I think it really makes some of those choices, especially in the beginning of the book, a lot stronger, like some of the symbolism, like the broken phone. He's playing with a ring on his finger, on his thumb.
The ring comes up a lot.
Yeah, we have to sort of go on this journey through memory in order to understand the greater context.
Mm-hmm. And like just his, I guess a little backstory on him. He's living at home, just finished high school. He's living with his parents and his sister. His sister, he has a kind of complicated relationship with, which I think is very common for siblings, where it's like, yeah, there's no one you love and hate the most at the same time. She's a little snarky. They kind of get at it a little bit, but they do still care about each other. His mom is probably his favorite person in the world, but he's also aware that if he comes out, he doesn't think she'll handle that well. And his dad is somebody who, as the story goes on, he sort of, I feel like in the beginning, he feels very obligated to love his father because he's like, that's my father. He's the man who raised me, even though he's not the best person. Mm-hmm. And as the story goes on, he sort of starts to have this awakening where he's like, do I actually have to love this person who is not kind to me or my mom or my sister? His dad is notoriously abusive throughout the book. On top of that, his family doesn't really have a lot of money. And his dad is also going back to India every year because culturally he has a second wife back there and he has another set of kids back there that he's sending money to. So this is also really frustrating for Sai because he has all these half siblings and his dad has this other wife. He just has this very complex relationship with all of his family members. And on top of that, he just feels so obligated to them, which is a very, very, very big thing in a lot of Eastern cultures, particularly South Asian Muslim cultures, that regardless of how your family treats you or how they are, they always come first and they're your main priority. And you are, it's, I talk about this with a lot of friends a lot, where Eastern and Western culture, the biggest difference that we always see is that in a lot of Eastern cultures, it's all about the unit and like taking care of your community and taking care of your family. And you don't want to do something that can make your family look bad because you aren't one person. You're part of this sort of bubble. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like in Western cultures, it's more putting yourself first and making sure that you take care of yourself before you take care of anyone else. Mm. And I think a lot of first generation, particularly Asian kids, are stuck in this middle point where you understand why both things are important and you have to find that balance between one another because your life with your friends is completely different from your life with your family. And especially adding on top of that, the layer of him being queer and in a family that wouldn't particularly be accepting of that, he really goes through this huge mental struggle that I definitely related to a lot while reading this book.
Wow, I really appreciate that added context. And I think it's interesting that, you know, this is a young adult novel. So all of this stuff is going on with the added life or death emotional state of being 17. And I think it just takes already really high stakes that you kind of mentioned and then like times it by 10. Because when kids have to navigate those complex relationships with their families and themselves, it's always a little bit more stressful. It's always a little bit worse. Kind of speaking of that complexity, and you mentioned there's a financial struggle as well going on in this story. Before, you mentioned that this kind of drunken but also magical being comes into Sai's life, Reggie. Can you tell me a little bit more about her and Sai's first encounter with Reggie?
Sai is just working at his coffee shop like usual, and suddenly he hears this loud slam against the window. And he looks outside and he sees this woman in like this super clubby, sexy outfit, these huge heels, this like beautiful long ponytail, very, very done up. And it just kind of looks a little bizarre almost when you're just in this random setting in the middle of the day at a random coffee shop. She slams against the window and falls down to the ground, and everybody else is just staring at her because they're like, what is this bizarre woman who's just drunkenly walking outside, crashing into windows? And Sai is the only one there who has a little bit of sympathy for her, and he comes outside and he checks on her and makes sure she's okay, makes sure she didn't hurt herself. And I think that's something that really struck Reggie right away. She's very self-aware. Even when she's at her weirdest little drunken tangents or whatever she's doing, she's aware that she does stand out in a crowd. And I think something about how Sai just looked right past all of that and just immediately went straight to kindness really stood out to her. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what really made her be like, I want to help this boy because he helped me when nobody else would.
Yeah. I think her character specifically reminded me a lot of other both literary characters and also folktale-y representations. When she was first introduced, my first thought was Manic Pixie Dream Girl, which I don't think is a great description of her throughout the rest of the book. But then her character started to remind me of two from Disney. One is the Wicked Witch from Beauty and the Beast. And Beauty and the Beast is mentioned in the book as well, because she kind of comes in as somebody who just seems too chaotic to really get involved with, but really exudes helpfulness to those who show her kindness. Mm-hmm. And then also, obviously, a genie character. Because, as we learn, she gives Sai three wishes. Classic. And Sai takes her up on the offer, which, good on him. I don't know if I would have done that.
I think it's also, like, because he was very skeptical about everything. Because he was like, who is this crazy lady? Why is she offering me wishes? What is any of this about? And after she did, he just sarcastically goes, oh yeah, well, give me $1 million then. And suddenly she just taps some numbers on her phone. He checks his bank account. There's an extra $1 million in there that I guess she just transferred right over. And that was one of those first moments. And you have these moments a lot reading the book where you're like, is she magical or is she just rich? Or is it both? Like, what is happening here? Because anytime she goes to grant a wish, it's never like how you see it in like an Aladdin movie or something like that, where a magical wish is granted. Or like, I don't know what Fairly Odd Parents comes to mind, where he says, I wish for this, and the thing just poofs in through a puff of smoke. None of them are like that. The first one where he asks for money, she physically has to transfer money from her like bank app, I guess, into his. And then all of his other wishes, he asks for the wish, but she doesn't just give it to him. She guides him towards whatever the wish is. Even when he's like, can't you just make it happen? She's like, no, because one of the catches of my wishes is I cannot change the way somebody else feels or how somebody else thinks. I can help you get to that person, but I can't make that person just show up. And you could say that that's a magical thing, or you could say that that's just her being realistic.
I kind of like that as like a message to young people reading the book. It's like, you can't change other people, but you can change how you react to situations.
And that definitely felt like a huge theme in the book too, is I felt like throughout the whole story, he's like, I want him back. But never once, up until like closer to the end, does he think, does he want me back?
Before we actually get on this wild adventure that Reggie will later guide Sai through, Sai has this $1 million. He gets a new phone. As we mentioned, he had a crack phone screen. He spends the afternoon buying stuff for his mom and for his sister. He gets fired from his job. And then he kind of has the most traumatic afternoon of his life.
As far as he knows, his dad is currently in India with his other wife. So he says throughout the book that those times where his dad goes away are the times where he feels peace in his home. Where it could just be him, his mom, and his sister. He's not worried about walking on eggshells around his dad, when his dad is going to snap next. And he goes out to the store. He gets his mom a new blender because she loves to cook. And I believe he gets his sister a Kindle because she likes to read. And he just shows up with all these gifts. And his mom and his sister are like, where did you get the money for all of this? Why do you have a new phone? And he just goes, oh, I've just been working some extra hours at work and I had some extra money and I wanted to treat the people that I love. His dad surprisingly comes home earlier than expected. And on top of, you know, being upset that his son just bought all these gifts for his wife and his daughter, had nothing for him, also in a bad mood in general, Sai's also bummed out now because he just had this great thing happen to him and he just feels like it got ruined because his dad came home early. At one point that night, his sister confronts him and they start talking about Farouk. His sister kind of had some idea of what was going on.
And she was also skeptical about how he had the money to do this. Yes. So it was kind of like a double confrontation. Like, what is going on? Like a very sisterly move.
Yeah, she kind of just came in and was like, I have all of these questions. What the hell is happening here? I think his sister kind of represents that slightly more religious aspect of younger Muslim people in America I've seen, where I feel like people kind of go in either direction. Either they very much follow what they were taught, or they start to question things a little bit. And I feel like the two of them kind of went in opposite directions, because his sister starts saying, oh, you can't be gay, that's a sin, we're not supposed to be that. It's almost like jarring to read that coming out of the mouth of like an American young teenage girl, because usually you would think like, oh, the people that are younger are gonna have maybe some more progressive mindsets, but in this case she really doesn't. And during all of this, they look up and his dad's standing right there and heard the whole conversation. Immediately his dad gets physical with him. His sister tries to stop him, but he just shoves her out of the way. Don't want to get into too much detail, but he did end up physically assaulting Sai and kicking him out of the house. He literally just packs whatever he could into his one backpack. He's still in his pajamas that he had on at home. And at one point, his mom goes to stop him, and she's like, please don't go. And he, at that point, just makes this decision that he cannot stay anymore. And even though he was trying to stay for her, he just couldn't do that. And I think this is also very common in a lot of abusive households, where even though only one parent is the abusive one, the other doesn't necessarily do anything to stop it. And so at this point, he's basically out on the street with nothing but his backpack. And he decides, just out of desperation, that the only person he could think to contact now is Reggie, because she gave him $1 million. So he's like, at least I have, you know, some sort of financial cushion if in case I need to go off and move out and live on my own. But I think he's now thinking, I really have nothing left to lose. So now he just wants Farouk back, because that's the only thing left in his mind that could bring him that happiness.
So let's talk a little bit about Farouk for a minute, because they were dating for like a year, as we mentioned. Between him meeting Reggie and between him getting kicked out of his house, we learned that Farouk's straight up missing in Europe. And that nobody knows where he is. And that all they have are Instagram pictures of his last known locations from a month ago. We also learned that Farouk convinced Sai to get a passport, which is going to be an important element, because we have a passport. We're able to take this adventure on a world tour. Now, not only does he have like this financial freedom, he has this travel freedom with some caveats, but he has that important document. So he gets to Reggie, who, armed with $1 million. What is Reggie's reaction to this?
He calls her up and he's like, listen, here's what happened. I have my second wish. I want Farouk back. And Reggie's like, I cannot make him come to you. I can't change the way he feels. The only thing I can do is I can help take you to him, and that's how I can grant you the wish. And they're trying to figure out where he is. Sai even calls Farouk's mom to see if she has any idea. She says that she has not heard from her son in a month. And she kind of blames Sai in a way, because Farouk asked Sai to come with him when he was going to go abroad, and Sai wouldn't do it. And I think Farouk's mom almost views it as he was trying to run away after getting his heart broken. So Farouk's mom has this resentment towards Sai. And all she tells him is, I haven't heard from him in a month, and don't call this number ever again. Leave me alone. And so all they have to go off of is this Instagram post where he's standing in front of a store in London. And so they think, okay, let's just go to London. And then they start this adventure.
Tell me a little bit more about this adventure. We have Sai, who's never been out of the country before, ever in his life. We have Reggie, who is lovely, but also a bit of a safety hazard. She's drinking a lot. She's making choices that at the end of the day are fine, but maybe aren't what I would make in the moment. And we're also dealing with a very tense political climate. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit more about where they go, the adventures that they go on while on the search for Farouk?
Yep. So they get to London, and of course, when they get to London, there's all these violent protests that are going on. He ends up meeting this slightly older, not that much older, but a little bit older gay couple who are both South Asian. And he ends up befriending them, and they hear his story, they hear what happened, and they're immediately like, we want to help you as much as we can. And I think just meeting that couple kind of gave him this idea that everything could be okay. Like, he sees these two South Asian men, probably in their 30s or 40s, I forget, living together happily in love. And he's like, this is what I want for my future. And now I feel like this is actually something that's possible because I'm seeing it with my own eyes. And it's almost like that representation is what keeps him going. And it's similar to a book like this, where somebody can read a book like this and be like, oh, there's other people out there that are just like me. He ends up finding the store that Farouk was working at. I believe it was like a little food place.
It had like a funny name, like the Queen's Chip Shop or something like something. Yeah, like so stereotypical London.
And he's talking to the man who works there, who was in the picture with Farouk.
Farouk made all these friends and connections in London, mm-hmm. but he didn't necessarily keep up. And so there's a lot of people wondering where this guy is.
Yeah. So every time he goes somewhere, he kind of just vanishes. And now he's leaving this trail of people. So while he's in London, he gets the name of this man who lives in Istanbul who may know Farouk or where he is. So now his next thing is to travel there and find this guy and see if he knows anything. So he turns mm-hmm. to Reggie and he's like, I guess we're going to Istanbul. And of course, Reggie, without any concern for money or anything, starts immediately flying them out to wherever they need to go. So now we're in our second location. He sees that this guy is giving tours just around the city. I mean, the first thing he notices is how attractive this man is.
Oh, wait, I think I just found the paragraph. Act natural, Romeo's coming this way. Reggie flounces her ponytail around to some strange internal beat, looking every bit the opposite of natural. I slink into a column and hide in its shadows, hoping to jump out at our target when the moment is right. This handsome man, who is, and I quote, just period, so period, dreamy, period, with those bulgy biceps under that super tight, almost uncomfortable looking t-shirt, with his deep brown eyes and lips so curvy and swollen. This is written by a 17-year-old, and I'm kind of obsessed with it. It's so funny. Just the epitome of, like, being an awkward teenager.
Cy and Reggie kind of start stalking this guy a little bit from far away, and they see that once he gets off of work, he starts to get on a train. And so Cy starts following him, but in the middle of this, he and Reggie get split up, and he has this, like, instinctual moment where he has literally a second to decide, do I get off this train and go with Reggie, or do I follow him and try to find Farouk? And I guess in that moment, he kind of decides to leave her and he goes off to find wherever this guy went. So he follows this guy to a bathhouse where he sees that he's also working, and he comes up to him and the guy asks, like, are you looking to get a massage? And Sai in this moment is like, I don't know what to do, so I'll just say yes. The massage is definitely a little bit more on the sexual side. He does take his shirt off, which Sai definitely mentions quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But one thing he does notice is that the guy is wearing a necklace, and it's a necklace that Sai gave to Farouk. And immediately he's completely heartbroken because he realizes that this is the next guy that Farouk was with after leaving Sai.
This handsome man, his name is Mustafa, before we to put a face to the name.
Or I guess a name to the face.
A name to the face.
He confronts Mustafa about it. He kind of gets upset at him because he's like, who are you? Why did you follow me here? And basically lets him know that he is no longer in contact with Farouk. He rips the necklace off, hands it to him. He's like, please leave me alone. Don't talk to me. And then Sai starts to get a few more hints about where Farouk could be. And these lead them to Marrakesh. which is now their next destination.
What I think is really interesting about this interaction as well is that Mustafa knows who Sai is because Farouk talked about Sai to him and was like the person he needed to let go of. And I just think that adds like a really interesting mental dynamic for Sai as he goes forward, being like, this might not be this really romantic.
And I think Mustafa already has like a negative connotation of Sai. So once he realizes who that is, he's like, oh, this is the guy who broke the heart of this guy I was talking to. So I already don't like him. And then on top of that, the guy I was talking to also left. So Mustafa probably has like all these layers going on in his head of like, I want no part of any of this. Leave me alone.
Yeah. And this journey goes from this, I want to say righteous, but I don't think that's the right word, but really wholesome, I think is the better word. Wholesome journey towards your first love to this, well, I'm in really deep. I'm going to find Farouk or die trying, but oh, has reality been shattered for me on this trip in so many ways.
So after he has his little confrontation with Mustafa, he realizes that the next place that Farouk may have gone was Marrakesh in Morocco.
So Reggie and Sai end up being able to meet up in Istanbul.
Yes. So now Reggie and Sai, they have their next destination that they have to get to. They do everything they can to get there. At one point, Reggie even buys a car because she needs to drive them. On this drive, they get into an accident. The way the accident is written, I felt like was done very well because you could feel almost like his brain kind of going in and out and like the things that he remembers, things starting to go foggy. So they get into this accident and he wakes up and he's in this tent. He's injured. He's confused. He's not sure what's happening. And he gets out and he sees that it's sort of this like medical kind of camp situation. There's all these doctors and nurses and all these families that are seeking medical help. And he's trying to figure out where Reggie is, first of all. And I think he also hits him that this is probably where Farouk came to work, because this was one of the things he wanted to do was volunteer in like these kind of medical situations in other countries. So he finds Reggie and they try to track down where Farouk is, and there's a little bit of a language barrier with a lot of the people that are working there.
Yeah.
And at one point he finds this family that Farouk had helped at one point. One of them says, oh, Farouk is gone. And immediately he's like, what do you mean he's gone? They're like, he's not. And again, it's completely like, looking back, it's almost like it's terrifying and sad, but a little comical how it kind of went about, because it was literally just like a language barrier with how they were speaking.
A classic comedy of errors. Like, yeah. He's gone. Like, what is
he's
gone?
He's no longer with us. Like, words that we would use to describe a death. It's now hit him that he's gone on this whole adventure and Farouk ends up passing away, or so we think. They do spend like a good chapter of him and Reggie just having this like moment together where he's mourning Farouk. And then while the two of them are talking, Reggie's like, turn around. And he's like, what do you mean? He turns around and he sees Farouk walking towards him. And they realize that when he said Farouk is gone, they didn't mean he died. They meant he left the camp to go get supplies or do whatever he needed to do, and he just came back. I will say reading this was an emotional roller coaster, but the sigh of relief when he was there was like, I can't even imagine like fully starting to accept that someone died and suddenly they're standing behind you and it was all a misunderstanding.
Yeah. Reading the reconnection of the two, it almost read like Sai, I don't want to say needed to think that Farouk died, because that's not fair. And that's a really tough thing to say, but he needed to almost have that perspective to kind of enter this confrontation, so to speak, with the upper hand. And I think it's also interesting reading their reunification, because you can see just how much Sai had matured from the beginning of the book and the flashbacks to where we are now. Because even though maybe just technically a week has passed in the linear timeline, it could have been like a year with the
like how much he's been through and like all the growing he's done, and you can really see how much he's grown. I get what you mean though. Like obviously you're not saying like it's good that he thought that Farouk was dead, but it was more so like he started to process the idea of him and Farouk not being together. And yeah. he almost needed that jump to like kind of push him in that direction.
In a traditional, I guess, YA novel, at this point, the romantic leads would run into each other's arms, probably make out a little bit, get on a white horse and ride into the sunset. But that's not what happens here at all.
No. So Sai and Reggie find Farouk, and Farouk and Sai have this emotional heart-to-heart, which ends with Sai ultimately choosing himself for the first time, but still getting that closure with Farouk. So I feel like all of it wasn't for nothing, because I think he needed to speak to Farouk one-on-one in order to give himself that closure. And also, even from Farouk's side, I think Farouk also needed that closure, because he kind of left on a whim, too.
Yeah.
And I think the two of them really decided that as much as they loved and cared for each other, being apart was what they needed. And that time that they had together was still important. It wasn't for nothing. But ultimately, I think they both decided together that they weren't meant to be together forever, even if that's what they thought a few months ago or even a week ago.
So here we are at the final chapters of this book. We go literally through this roller coaster of an adventure, emotionally and just worldly wise.
Mm-hmm.
And Sai is only asked or requested or made 2 wishes. We have 1 more left.
Mm-hmm.
What does he wish for?
So at various points through the book, Sai asks Reggie about these wishes that she grants. Has she done this with other people before? What do people usually wish for? What would she wish for? And that's a question that she almost struggles with a little bit whenever he asks, because she's like, I don't need anything. I have all this money. I'm fine. But you can tell that she's definitely not fine with just how she speaks, how she's longing for this kindness and friendship, but she won't admit it, but you can see it. Sai kind of gets out of her like what her family life was like growing up and how she, you know, lives this lavish life with partying and drinking and all of this stuff. And she claims to be happy, but you know she's still missing something. And one thing that she does tell Sai is most people don't take a third wish. Most people are fine after their second. Sai asks for 1 last wish, aside from also going home. He's like, I want us to go home, but for my actual final wish, I want you to be my family and I want to be your family, because I think we've formed this bond over these last few days and they've both grown to really love each other. And I think he's really realized that what she's been missing this whole time was a friend and a family that loved her for who she was. And he says that he can give her that.
I also think, you know, he finally gets a true ride or die that he didn't really have in his friendships with any of his like biological family or even Farouk. Even though he thought that's what Farouk was. So it takes her a while to warm up to that proposal. Like, she does not accept being family right away. It takes them going home and trying to restart life to grant that wish.
One thing I didn't mention is throughout the book, while Sai is away, he keeps getting calls from his mom and he's not accepting them.
Yeah.
And at one point, his sister leaves a message and she's like, you need to come home right now. There's something wrong with Dad. You need to get home. And Sai is so conflicted about this because he's already having all these issues with his family. He's already started this adventure that he doesn't want to just stop and go home for, especially after getting kicked out. But his sister ends up telling him that their dad had a heart attack and he's in the hospital. And so after Sai has his little confrontation with Reggie, she doesn't really accept his offer right away, but she doesn't decline it either. They just have this quiet plane ride back home. She says her goodbyes. They go their separate ways. The first place that he goes after landing back home is to the hospital. He and his mom have this little heart-to-heart moment where she, you know, apologizes for letting him go and apologizes for everything that he's been through. But she does still have that sort of old school mindset of he's still your father and you still have to love him. And he enters the hospital room where his dad's awake and he doesn't really let his dad say anything. And he just tells him more or less, I will not be treated the way you treat me. And you can accept me for who I am, or you cannot, that's on you. Which I think is a big moment for him, because he's never been able to stand up to his dad like that before. And there were even all these points throughout, after he found out about the heart attack, where he kept thinking, like, would I be sad if my dad died? And there's almost that acceptance of, you can be both. You can be sad, but also relieved at the same time. And I think that's a big topic that we've been talking about recently, especially with, like, Jeanette McCurdy's new book that came out that kind of dealt with the loss of an abusive parent.
Absolutely. And that
is kind of tying back to all the discourse that I've been seeing online about that book, and how there's sort of this back and forth of, is it okay to be relieved that a parent died if that parent wasn't doing their job properly as a parent? Ultimately, his father doesn't die, and he does move back home, and I wouldn't say that they've, you know, reconnected and they live happily ever after, but they both know that they have a lot of work to do. And now Sai's at a point where he's like, I'm not ready to fully leave my family, but at the same time, we have to figure something out if we're going to make this work. And it kind of just ends with this, like, happy little dinner scene of Sai, Zakir, Reggie, his parents, and his sister awkwardly eating dinner together, and everyone's like, who are these people? Sai basically says that Reggie's friendship and kindness helped him escape this entrapment that he was in, both literally and figuratively, and get over this fear he had of the world, that anytime Farouk tried to get him to go anywhere, he was just so scared to leave home, and he just kind of, he's like, relinquished that fear, and he's just become this new person. He thanks her for helping him find himself and his happiness, and so he calls her his loophole. And thanks her for being his loophole.
And with that, with the title of the book, we can officially say the end. But stay tuned, because we have a few more words to say.
Throughout the book, like after several chapters, they would have these little cuts to the side story about Hamza, who is a flautist who teams up with a djinn to go into the underworld to rescue the love of his life. And the story is pretty much like a loose retelling of the story of Orpheus and Eurydice, who are also mentioned throughout the story as well. But you're kind of getting like this Middle Eastern adaptation of that story.
So can I ask, what is a djinn?
So a djinn is the word that became anglicized into a genie. So that is like the correct word, essentially, for it. I've always been taught that there's some sort of like a demon who live among us, and they have these magical powers. And if you find out someone's a djinn, you should stay away from them. Going back to Ms. Marvel for a second. They kind of go into that a little bit, because at the end of one of the episodes, she gets told that her ancestors were djinns, and that's where her superpowers come from. And there was a lot of discourse within like the Muslim community about this, because you have this representation of this Muslim superhero in Marvel for the first time, and they just went and made her this being that we're supposed to kind of like frown upon. But then in the next episode, they kind of say that like, you aren't really a djinn. Somebody just showed up with superpowers one day and people saw them and thought, oh, that's a djinn. And so that's why we call ourselves that. But that's not actually what we really are. So a lot of people just kind of see it as somebody who has these like mythical powers that don't come from God, so nobody knows where they come from, and so they're kind of something to stay away from.
It kind of reminds me of witches, and we can bring that to other Marvel characters, but that'll take a whole conversation.
We can do another episode on Marvel if you want. Let me know.
Absolutely. I know that would be your bread and butter. Okay, so we have this side story of Hamza and the djinn going through the underworld. I know through like Greek myths, the story that is told feels very familiar. Can you tell us a little bit more about that story? You're kind of going to do that, and I interrupted you. I apologize.
No, you're fine. To kind of sum it up, the story is essentially Orpheus and Eurydice meet, they fall in love. She gets trapped in the underworld, and he goes on an adventure to find her. Hades, who's the leader of the underworld, says, I will let you take her back, but the one exception is she has to walk behind you the entire journey back. And if at any point you turn around to make sure she's still there, she's going to get sucked down and trapped forever. And at the end of the story, spoiler alert, he does have that final moment of doubt when they're just a few steps away from being home, where he just turns around and she's still right behind him, and Hades just comes up and brings her right back down. So the story of Hamza and the djinn, it's kind of similar to this, where he has this lover who dies and he goes on this adventure to go back and find her. And all of this ties back into the loophole because, quite literally, Sai is going on an adventure to find the person that he loves. And throughout this, he also has all these moments of doubt. And like, doubt, I feel like, is a big theme in all of these stories.
Speaking of theme in the loophole, and maybe connecting it a little bit to today, obviously a major theme or a major motif in the story is adventure. We definitely covered that. Doubt, I think, is a really interesting thing to mention. And also, I found there was a huge theme of like found family, which I think kind of connects it like really closely to the queer community anyway.
Yes. Going back to your whole theme of adventure that we're talking about this season.
Yeah.
I feel like that was the biggest word that stuck out to me while I was reading. Mostly because, you know, Sai and Reggie, they go on an adventure across the world in order to hunt down Farouk. But the adventure is both literal physical adventure, but it's also this emotional adventure that he goes on. Because he goes on this emotional journey to find out who he is and how he can love himself for who he actually is. He doesn't need somebody else to do that. And so the word adventure, it has this like double meaning of both like a physical adventure, but also this emotional journey that you're going on. With that, the idea of found family, the idea that the people who you consider your family don't necessarily have to be your relatives. They're just the people who love you for who you are. And you both give each other that love and connection that, you know, most people desire.
Also, isn't this the debut novel of this author?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's Nas Kutub, I believe, is his name.
So that's definitely somebody that, you know, you should follow their career, because what an interesting book. How else can we connect this to the right now? Like, why do you think this book is an important piece to be reading right now?
So I feel like while obviously LGBTQ representation and representation for people of color has improved immensely over the recent years, things like homophobia, racism, and Islamophobia, things like that are still prevalent in our everyday culture. And I feel like we're constantly hearing these stories of harassment, abuse, and oppression towards these groups, and hate crimes towards minorities that have been rising all over the country.
Yeah.
And this story specifically explores this intersection between South Asian people, gay people, and Muslim people, which are three very different experiences. They're all so connected in a lot of certain ways, which I obviously understand firsthand. And, you know, you'll see like South Asian Muslim representation, or you'll see, you know, queer representation. It's really rare that you see them together. And I really off the top of my head can hardly think of anything where I remember seeing like a queer South Asian Muslim person portrayed in a major way like this. So just from like a representation standpoint, I know personally there's a lot of people that I know that can really relate to a book like this in a lot of different ways. And even if you're just one of those things, if you're just South Asian, if you're just queer, if you're just Muslim, you'll find things in here that you'll relate to. But you'll also find things that you maybe wouldn't have thought that you would relate to about other people's cultures that all kind of tie in together and intersect in such a nice way. I feel like even though the story has a lot of darker moments, it really is a celebration of all of these identities and learning to love yourself for exactly who you are, even if the different directions of your own identity can try to bring you down.
Yeah. I really appreciate, I feel like this has been something, a reason why I love to make this podcast in general, but especially, you know, reading this story, it reminds me of how just as people, it's so easy to find similarities between different cultures and between different religions. And so often people just choose not to. But when Sai was kind of dealing with like the religious side of things and trying to argue, like trying to figure out if he feels comfortable being religious, if he doesn't, like, what does that mean? I know a lot of the generational anxiety of parents and grandparents and how that's so specific to culture, but also can be expanded to other cultures. And I don't know. I just find that to be really special and such a strong connector.
And I feel like in general, we love putting people into separate boxes. Mm-hmm. And like these boxes aren't really boxes. They're more like little Venn diagrams almost. Like things intersect, things connect. And I feel like there's no one way to tell the story of a certain group of people because of all these intersections. There's going to be all these nuances and everything that I wish we would explore more of in stories like this. So that's why I loved how his South Asian culture, his Muslim background, and him being a queer person are all explored in this book, both separately, but also how each of those things impact one another to make him the person that he is.
I would like to give you your space to promote yourself in any way you want. Are you working on anything right now? Do you want to promote any social media? Promote somebody else? Here is your space.
Nothing particular that I'm working on right now, but feel free to follow me. I am at Mupassan Zaman on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. If you want to know how to spell my name, it's written around here somewhere.
Also, support your local bookstores. I feel like that's the big lesson for today.
Your local bookstores. Charm City Books in Baltimore, Maryland. If you're in the DMV area, go visit them. Go buy a copy of this book or whatever book. They seem like they're run by really cool people. And of course, we love supporting local bookstores. So definitely do that.
100%. And I say this as I like literally bought the Kindle book because
I mean, I am guilty of buying things from like Amazon and Barnes and Noble as well, but you know,
support
local whenever you can,
or go to your local public library.
Yes.
There's a lot of ebook options for your public library, and public libraries are just great, and librarians don't get half the appreciation they need. They literally run the world and provide a safe space for so many people. Thank you so much, Mupassan, for coming on again and for telling this story and for being such an awesome, willing participant in this adventure we call podcasting. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again for having me. I had a great time, as always. Please let me know if there's anything else you ever want me to talk about on here, because I always have a fun time doing it.
Awesome. You got it.
You can learn more about Once Upon a Time, a storytelling podcast, by checking out our Instagram and TikTok at A Storytelling Podcast. You can also email us at astorytellingpodcast@gmail.com. Our music this season is Hopeful Start by John Bartman. Once Upon a Time, a Storytelling Podcast is a production of Talia Smith and Emily Jova. The end.